is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The New World Report with Professor Evan Ellis, U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. We are within hours of the first round voting in Brazil, the second largest state in the New World, critical to the success of the whole New World. And the choices, I'm told, are stark, ranging over the last decades, and something called the pink tide on the ballot, if I understand correctly. Professor, very good evening to you. As I understand, in a new article published by two professors, Professor Rubin of Boston University and Professor Yoris of the University of Denver, once upon a time, there was the legend of the pink tide, late 20th century, early 21st century, I believe, meaning a polite way of saying left of center, populism. That pink tide is said to be back, at least asserted with the election of Mr. Boric in Chile, Mr. Petro in Colombia, etc. Here again, we have the choice between former President Lula da Silva and present, current residential professor, President Mr. Bolsonaro, between right and left. Is that a useful comparison anymore, Evan? I want to start with a big, frequently asked question by those of us who are not informed of these decades. Right and left, is that the way it's seen in Brazil? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, John. Well, first of all, across Latin America, there is a great deal of diversity within both the right and left. I mean, certainly within the left, you have the hardcore populist authoritarians like Nicolas Maduro in Venezuela or the Ortegas in Nicaragua. And you have, more progressive-oriented, the young and outspoken Gabriel Boric, for example, in Chile. But when you look at Brazil, what happened in Brazil is not unlike what happened in the United States in the past 20 years or so. So on the one hand, you had a process in which the with the downturn of the Brazilian economy starting about 2012, 2014, you had increasingly, marginalized people who felt themselves left out of the system, but also conservatives, the rise of an evangelical movement, people frustrated that the political correct politics did not include them. That was part of the core of the base that went over to Jair Bolsonaro in the most recent elections. But on top of that, of course, you had corruption scandal after corruption scandal coming out in Brazil, especially involving Dilma Rousseff, who succeeded Lula in power, and then the corruption conviction of Lula himself. And so it was really on top of those frustrations of the corruption of Brazilian politics, plus a sense that economically and also where things were going socially, that a core group of supporters, not unlike those who supported Donald Trump in the United States, went with Jair Bolsonaro. On the other hand, however, you have within the left a certain nostalgia, because when Lula da Silva himself was in power, he presided over relative prosperity. There were high petroleum prices. Of course, Brazil has a very important petroleum sector. And so some of the things that Lula did, for example, funding something called Bolsa Família, a cash transfer program for the poor, a program for zero hunger, et cetera, were well remembered. So people remember the good times with Lula. They remember him being relatively moderate. And so right now there are two very different discourses of those who support Lula and those who support Bolsonaro. But certainly those who support Bolsonaro see Lula as representing a broader nefarious left and connected with authoritarians like Nicolas Maduro. Those who are, of course, part of that movement may disagree with to what degree Lula represents a threat. So there's just two very different discourses going on in an increasingly polarized environment right now in Brazil.
The negatives of both candidates are being emphasized by opposing sides. So I want to spend time with the negatives. The negatives of Mr. Bolsonaro is that he's an authoritarian associated with regressive thinking, cultural regressive thinking, I think. Also that he failed during the pandemic. All of these charges are current, and are they persuasive now? Or is there another item that is being used against Mr. Bolsonaro that scores heavily?
Well, certainly both those on the left and arguably many in the center feel very frustrated with Bolsonaro. As you pointed out, about 60% disapprove of his handling of the pandemic. A number disapprove of some of his often very provocative comments about women, about people LGBT, et cetera, et cetera. Yet his core supporters, again, see essentially a culture, a way of life that's being attacked by a politically correct left. But certainly his negatives are running about 10% higher than those of Lula on the other side. Lula has been effective in appealing to the center with something like eight different former presidential candidates actually endorsing Lula himself. And then overall in the vote, you see that if the vote were held today, which we're almost there, by some estimates, Lula might even get the 50% that he needs to win on the first round. But more than likely, he will get close to 50%. And then in the second round, the two other major candidates who are in the race, Ciro Gomes, who is polling about 9%, and Simone Tebet, who is polling about 5%, the vast majority of them will probably go over to Lula. And so the second round calculations is that with those negatives and everything else against Bolsonaro, Lula probably prevails by, you know, maybe as many as 16 or 17 points.
Now, the negative about Lula da Silva is that he's associated with a transnational scandal called car wash in English. And I believe so was his successor, Dilma Rousseff. And these charges were never resolved so much as Mr. Lula da Silva was stepped out of jail because I'm told a technicality with the court. I mean, that could mean anything. But in any event, is the corruption charge of car wash now said that was then, this is now? How is it regarded in Brazil?
Well, certainly with Bolsonaro's supporters and with a certain number of centrists who long have been frustrated with the corruption of Brazilian politics, these scandals are part of kind of a broader sense of Lula being corrupt, the PT being corrupt. And so it actually even went back before car wash, something called the Mensalão scandal, where it came out that members of the PT were actually being paid off within Congress to vote the way that Lula wanted them to vote. And then so after that, when the car wash scandal, which involved involved Odebrecht, which involved Bandeirantes and some of Brazil's biggest public companies that came out, again, that broadened the sense of frustration over the corruption. But then when it was pinned first on Dilma Rousseff, forcing her to resign, leading to the government of Michel Temer, but then when it was pinned on Lula himself, that was kind of the last straw. And so a very high profile prosecutor, Sergio Moro, was able to in a very aggressive way pin a particular car wash related charge on Lula. 2019, you had the trial. He was actually sentenced and went to jail and was disqualified from running for the presidency. But as you pointed out, there was a technicality about the way in which the prosecutor went after Lula, not about the charges himself. And so many people look to those charges and say, well, Lula was found guilty. He is corrupt. But, now he's back. And so if you are frustrated with corruption in Brazil, if you were frustrated with your sense of Lula and the PT, the fact that he was exonerated on a technicality doesn't make you feel any better about that. And certainly Bolsonaro has been hitting hard on that point about the corruption, as well as on the social things, appealing to a base of about 30% evangelicals in Brazil, and certainly appealing also to fear of some type of pink tide or a communist socialist movement of the Brazilian government. So these are all hot button issues that Bolsonaro certainly appeals to push people away from Lula.
The concern over the vote and the vote being accepted. Mr. da Silva has spoken of this often, and there's also been question of violence during the campaign and I believe after the campaign. There's also the question of who will recognize the results of the election if we get a 50% on the first round or a 50% on the second round. How long is the gap between the president-elect and the inauguration? Is it several months the way it is here, Evan?
Well, the inauguration, John, is January 1st, presuming that all goes well. So you will have a first round vote October 2nd, and then a second round vote at the end of October. So that leaves a little bit of time if there are charges in the courts. But the fact that it's probably not going to be a terribly close election is going to make that difficult. Many of these charges also, the kind of the anticipation that Lula may do something akin to a U.S. style, you know, January 6th event. I think that has been used to question the democratic credentials of Jair Bolsonaro so much. I mean, it's not clear whether that'll actually happen. The Supreme Court did say that the army could basically oversee to a certain degree the election. There have, you have a relatively strong, competent person who is overseeing Alexander de Moraes and the Supreme Tribunal who's trying to you know, keep an eye on things. So my sense is that this is the contesting of the election is probably more, you know, talk and something that's used by the Lula supporters than something that's actually going to happen. And my sense is that even those close to Jair Bolsonaro are trying to discourage him from going down that path, even within the army, who's making an admirable effort to be apolitical in this.
And finally, back to the metaphor of the pink tide. Mentioned is the election in Chile, the election in Colombia. Is this a different pink tide than existed at the end of the 20th century, early 21st century? Has something changed in Latin America about the populist left?
Absolutely, John. What's happening today is completely without precedent. In the early 2000s, of course, you had an initial movement of people on the one hand relatively hardcore, like Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, other people who were relatively centrist but also moving to the left, like at the time Lula da Silva. But at that time, you did not have the level of authoritarian entrenchment that you have today with Venezuela and Nicaragua. And also, you know, there were just a handful of countries, although that was debatable. Today, especially if the PT and Lula win in Brazil, literally every single country in all of South America, with the exception of a centrist government in Uruguay, a centrist government in Ecuador, and a center-right government in Paraguay. But every other country will be one flavor or not on the left. But again, there's a diversity within that movement. But even with that diversity, creating certain concerns about political crisis and authoritarianism, it will create profound difficulties with U.S. leadership on certain policy agendas, and will create many openings for actors such as the PRC to at least have expanded economic engagement and state-to-state deals, as well as certain forms of political cooperation. And at the end of the day, for certain organizations such as the Organization of American States, it will take things in a new direction and probably give new life to multilateral organizations like CELAC and more left oriented agenda that they are pursuing for the hemisphere.
Professor Evan Ellis, U.S. Army War College, Strategic Studies Institute. We turn to the Americas next. That would be Puerto Rico, struggling after the hurricane, the second in 5 years that has damaged badly the infrastructure and the confidence. This is the New World Report. I'm John Batchelor.